listeners, welcome to Biz Culture Matters. This is Zach Gandra here with Steve Gandra. You want to say what's up, Steve?
What's up, Zach?
I think I meant what's up to the listeners.
Oh, okay. What's up, listeners? They're not saying anything.
I know. Well, they don't know that the show's pre-recorded and we just had lunch while they're in the having breakfast. So we're here again with you as we are every Saturday morning, talking about business culture in your businesses, in your lives. We hope that today will be a wonderful episode for you. We've got a great guest we're really looking forward to welcoming here in a couple minutes. But wanted to start off with a little bit of just cultural banter, Steve. You've been going and going for the last couple of weeks, and we haven't had an update from you on what's going on in your neck of the woods and who you've been talking to lately. So give us the lowdown.
Well, had the great opportunity this past week to work with several really cool companies. Been working on a project with the Scion division of Toyota and building a culture of high performance. Been back and forth to Washington, D.C. on the East Coast with another exciting client out there, and then a technology client just recently today that is looking to make change happen with a team that's been around for a lot of years to deliver results in less than 6 months because the board wants to make it happen. So exciting times ahead for the culture business.
Very cool. And we're in the Seattle-Tacoma area, so welcome all you Seattle-Tacoma listeners. We're glad you're here with us this morning on Clay 1180 AM. Steve, what are some of the local clients that you've been working with over the years?
Well, I had lots of fun recently with the firm and our guest, John. I think you might know these guys because they're not far from where you are. GM Nameplate, great local firm, does a wonderful job, family business that has grown to, you know, global expansion, manufacturing firm. Recently, in fact, we're going to have their CEO on the show, Brad Root, coming up soon. Recently received the Boeing Supplier of the Year Award 3 years running, which I understand has never happened before. So lots of fun things going on in the greater Seattle area. Just finished a first stage project with Rogers Weed, the director of the Department of Commerce for the state of Washington. They're implementing lean culture in our state and making great things happen. If you'd like to listen in, we actually were able to interview Rogers a few weeks ago. Go to excellentcultures.com and download the podcast, and you know, you'll love to hear how our government is actually, in this state anyway, making a huge difference in causing commerce and the economy to go up instead of down, which is great news to Washingtonians, I'm sure.
Yeah, good stuff. Like, I had a chance to sit in with you on the GM Nameplate stuff, and those guys are top notch, and it's been excellent to see their process over the last few years and how they've grown with the help of Excellent Cultures, as well as the great leadership they have going on there. And that's a family-owned business, yeah?
Family-owned business.
Everybody's scared to work at family-owned businesses, but not there.
They've got a great culture.
They've got a great culture, and they've worked hard at it. Well, we do have on the line, Steve mentioned that we have John Kieber on the line, who is COO of Group Publishing. Man, horrible introduction there. Sorry about that, John.
No problem.
He's a great guy. Just tell everybody. He's a great guy, very knowledgeable.
Tiger Oak Media, overseeing media properties such as Seattle Magazine, Seattle Business, Seattle Health, and Seattle Bride, which I think we're all excited to hear about, John.
That's the one that I get most excited about.
Yeah, all of our business guys out there especially want to hear about Seattle Bride.
Seattle Bride. They have daughters that they're nervously holding their guns waiting for them to get engaged.
Yeah, they should be.
But let me mention, too, that those publications reach over a million local readers each month. And that's powerful. I've definitely read through Seattle Magazine and do weekly. I live in Capitol Hill. John, I hear you live in Magnolia.
Yeah, we cover both those neighborhoods. Most people in Seattle have come across Seattle Magazine at some point, but certainly at Tiger Oak, it's some of our other titles that that we're seeing grow a lot faster. And yeah, the Bride market certainly continues to develop both in print and online. We have Bride magazines actually up and down the West Coast in Oregon and California. Seattle Business Magazine, we've grown into a great multi-platform type of business where it's not just in print, but coming alive in a lot of different events. Family Business Awards, actually, you were just talking about GM Nameplate. We've honored them a couple times at different Seattle business events. Best Companies to Work For, we're actually coming up with the Executive Excellence Awards in January. So it's just been a great challenge. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a learning experience, too, over the last couple of years, transforming a group of magazines into something that's more than just print, but also reaching some other points of media.
Well, one of the things that I was really impressed with when I heard you speak last, John, was how you've taken this business that most think, you know, the paper print publishing business is obsolete because everything is online and everything is web-based. And in listening to your comments and, you know, you share about how you've been able to integrate the, you know, web-based, you know, news and publishing business with the paper business, it was just extremely exciting. And I know a lot of us who have been around for a while would love to hear, you know, anything that you can share with our listeners about, you know, why is your vision so different? Why do you think that what everybody else is saying is right on, is not necessarily right on? And how have you become such an innovator in an industry that's been around forever?
A lot of good questions. Well, let me start just with a little bit on the media business itself. I mean, we saw a lot of unrest, and we were no different than a lot of media businesses, where somewhere around early 2009, we certainly had to look deep into that abyss of falling revenue and falling readership, and you know, what's happening with subscriptions. And it was an interesting time, and you saw some businesses just go away, go out of business. Pack it in, just say it's not worthwhile. And you know, for us, we certainly had our dark moments, but I think we did two things with that period. One is it gave us a chance to look at our business anew and not just rely on the same ways of generating revenue, but realize that we had a different mission than being a print magazine, that actually our different magazines were affinity groups that were supported by community and that believed in brands and believed that, whether it was Seattle Business or Seattle Magazine, that they were interested in what we had to offer in terms of events, in terms of content, and in terms of what we could deliver both as news and as insight. And I think when you're purely a news organization like a newspaper, that can be hard to do. There's probably other ways they could have innovated as well, some of the ones that have failed. But for us, we started to see some other opportunities. And just getting to some of your questions on culture, I think it was also a chance for us to see that we were an entrepreneurial organization, that we weren't just, you know, a command and control type place. Certainly, I didn't have all the answers. We came up with the answers through a number of people in our organization that were able to and had the freedom to come up with new ideas and find ways of implementing them.
That's awesome. So, Tiger Oaks is, I mean, just the different segments of the market that you reach is so broad. Was this part of the vision from the beginning, or did it just kind of happen as you started growing your list, you know, your reader base?
It was definitely not the vision from the beginning. I mean, certainly print media had nothing to complain about. We saw a golden age before I was in the business, and in the 80s and the 90s were pretty kind to publishing as well. But I think what we started to build and built it along with our founder, Craig Bednar, is the idea that it's not individuals and it's not just writing. It's about building a culture where people can come up with their own ideas. And as long as you have great content, there's a lot of different things you can do with that. So that's been part of Tiger Oak from the very beginning, the idea that people are empowered to, if you're an editor, to cover what you want. If you're an art director, that you can execute the way you want. If you're an event producer, you can find events that produce. And we do use money as a scoreboard to make sure things are successful and sustainable and can make it happen. But I think the key thing is that we had a vision for being entrepreneurial, and that allowed different types of content to be monetized. Once you recognize that you're producing great content, there's a lot of different ways to get people to pay for it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting in listening to you, John, talk about this concept of building culture where people feel empowered to come up with their own ideas, we hear that jargon from lots of business leaders. And then when we go and kind of utilize, you know, the scorecard of our our business culture MRI that gives people the opportunity to under the bridge of anonymity, tell it like it is, tell us how the culture really is, and look at the scorecard, we find that what the leader thinks is empowered, entrepreneurial, everybody thinking out of the box kind of culture is just a whole lot of people nodding their heads and smiling to please the boss and agreeing with that idea because it's politically correct. But deep down inside, they're holding back. And one of the things that I noticed when I first, you know, experienced some of your energy and some of your creativity and some of your comments is that, you know, there's something going on at Tiger Oaks under your leadership that is real and a demonstration of real culture where empowerment and entrepreneurialism and engagement are really happening, not just jargon. I mean, can you think of any thoughts or ideas? Well, I just got the break sign, so hold that thought for a second. We're going to be right back, and John, when we get back, we want to hear your insights on how you have taken those words of empowerment and engagement and actually implemented them in the organization so it happens rather than just be part of the politically correct conversation.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
Right, we are back with Biz Cultures Matters, and we are here with John Heber. Steve, you left off our last session there with a great question for John. You want to reintro that?
Yeah, John, we're looking for trade secrets, if you will, to building cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement. You know, in today's world of corporate ethics and awes, one of our guests shared where it's one culture behind the curtain like the Wizard of Oz and another one out in the public forum. We're looking for your insights on how you've been able to deploy those ideas in your own organization so they manifest as reality in people's behaviors and thoughts and attitudes as opposed to just, you know, pithy conversation you put on your website.
That's a great observation, recognizing the data that you see in uncovering with some other businesses. Sometimes employees and all parts of your organization can just go with the flow, and certainly people have built entire careers and can operate for years by doing that, and some people certainly get rewarded for doing it in the long term. But for me, I guess, you know, sometimes you're your own worst analyst in terms of what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. But I think one of the things I've recognized with myself and with some of the other great managers at Tiger Oak is usually your time of biggest weakness is often the biggest opportunity to build trust and to build some faith in the fact that you have a real culture and a real management team. So an example I'll give is 2009, as I referenced already, was not an easy time in the publishing business. And to be frank, it was a tough time for us to pay our bills. We saw revenues fall so steeply in a 3 or 4 month period that it was challenging. And I think you might see some cultures where, as a manager, as someone involved in the financial operations, you're maybe embarrassed, you're maybe upset at the market, you're concerned people are going to leave. But the only way to handle that is to really pull people together. And I mean, you can call it admitting a mistake or just calling reality as it is. But we did that. We were able to pull people together and explain, listen, we're facing an unprecedented time in our business. We didn't all see it coming. This is happening faster and worse than we thought. And we don't have the answers right now. And this is going to be a really tough time. And that was hard to do. And the even harder part to accept is there were a couple people in our organization that lost faith in what we're doing, chose to do something different. But looking back, I think we realized that was a turning point for our organization, where people realized management is not here to blow smoke with us. They're not here to pretend something's different than it actually is. And because they're not, I guess we shouldn't be either. And I think we all started seeing a lot more truth-telling, a lot more autonomy, and a lot more realizing that management wasn't there to control people, wasn't there to take credit where it wasn't due. It was a lot of human beings in the room trying to make what is normally a very fun and exciting business survive through a very difficult time.
You know, this concept of leadership transparency, I find, is kind of a common thread that runs through, you know, the minds and hearts of most of the great leaders that we have had the opportunity to interview. And, I was in dialogue recently with a business leader who, you know, is known to the public as a good guy, you know, kind of a good guy, does a lot of work for charity and charitable organizations. And yet when we got down to, you know, doing confidential interviews with this leader's direct reports, some of the feedback that they had wasn't totally different, but it was different enough that when we delivered it back to the boss, it actually offended him and made him angry. And what I find is that, you know, it's always so much easier to say, I want to be transparent, tell me what you think, open door policy, give me your feelings. But then when the news that you hear is so opposite of what it is you thought you've already been sending, and that people are receiving it totally differently as filtering it through their filter systems, I mean, how did you, like, in this tough situation that you just described, how were you able to keep your own emotions intact so that when you got to the place of having to, you know, tell the naked, honest truth with a vision of, I don't know what the future is going to look like, as opposed to everything's beautiful and positive, hang around. How did you deal with yourself, John, and how were you able to actually get yourself out there and open up and put yourself on the line where people really received it as the way you sent it?
Well, let me first admit some weakness before I answer that. It can backfire. I mean, you can, as a leader, be transparent. You can be totally truthful. And I think if you have some people in your organization that are maybe not used to that, or maybe their intentions aren't as wholesome as you'd like, occasionally you will get someone who, you know, can turn that against you. Well, you made this mistake before, or you did this before, or you told us this, and then we ended up doing that, and why is that? So it can be tough, and that can compound the situation to make it even harder to be transparent on everything going forward. I think ultimately what you realize, to answer your question in terms of what was the discussion I had with myself to realize that was the best course of action for me, and I think for our whole management team going forward, is just at the end of the day, you're working extremely hard, and whether it's in work or relationship or anything, you're going to have a lot tougher time carrying on something that's not true than you are doing the alternative. So in our case, telling people that everything was just fine, but then having them realize, wow, you know, we're getting a lot of complaints about bills not being paid, or, you know, gee, things aren't going as well as they normally do. Something else is going on. It's connecting those dots. It makes it an easy decision to start being really straight with people about what you're trying to do. But when you get the added dividend of confidence and people feeling like they're on the same team, I think at that point it just becomes an obvious tenet of management. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but it can be difficult sometimes, no question.
Yeah, no, I think it answers it really well. It was like your own conversation that you carried on with yourself, reminding yourself that it was going to be a whole lot harder to carry off essentially which would be either a lie or a politically correct Pollyanna-ish statement, as opposed to just telling the naked truth and dealing with it, is something that they don't teach you in business school. Where'd you learn that, John?
Sometimes you wonder if they teach the opposite. Well, I don't know the answer to that one. I mean, I've had a number of experiences where I haven't had to be answering, I think, to a bigger boss or a bigger ownership group. Prior to this, I was involved in a couple different startups, and when you're in the startup world, it's different in the sense that on the one hand, you're not necessarily building something to last right off the get-go. A lot of entrepreneurs say they are, but it's extremely hard to look past the first year when you're starting something up. But on the other side of the coin, in a startup, you have no luxury at all to be politically correct or to climb the ladder, because really there is no ladder. There's just a big, bad marketplace looking back at you. And if you aren't being completely straight up with your colleagues who are trying to get a closely held venture going, you're going to be in big trouble. And you're going to be in big trouble with your own money or someone's money that's very close to you. So I think that's maybe the only thing I can point to that other people, when they're hiring or when they're looking to wonder if someone's going to have the awareness to really build a culture of transparency and openness, is if they've had an experience going through a startup venture or something where there was high stress and I guess nowhere to hide, that's usually a pretty good scenario for someone who's going to be able to take some of the basic seeds of a culture of openness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I don't think our listeners know too, because I didn't mention in the bio that John, you've actually started a few ventures, a few businesses. And what we know about you are some of them succeeded and some of them failed.
Well, if you haven't had a few failures, I don't think you're a true entrepreneur of really lived the life. But I had the benefit of actually getting going with the first online hardware store. It was like the first Home Depot on the internet back in 1998, called Hardware.com, and actually it was Superbill.com before that. And we had a great run. We had a few opportunities to get acquired, and ended up selling actually to some of the former founders of Eagle Hardware, if some of your listeners might remember that hardware store that's now Lowe's. So, yeah, I mean, doing that, I was involved in a speech technology business that's still going and funded by one of the bigger venture capital groups in town. But it's, you know, people really like to differentiate or sort of put the startup world in a different box from the corporate world. And no question, there's different cultures, but I don't think the rules for business are any different. I mean, you have a market and you have people and you have human nature and you have people dealing with all the stresses that come with running a life and running a career and trying to do great things. And I think that sometimes we overcomplicate what some of those, I guess, basic principles are, and I think you guys are doing some of the great work of trying to break that down for people that are maybe having a tougher time with it.
Yeah, we've all heard the quote, right, from Rear Admiral Grace Murray Hopper that said, you manage things, but you lead people.
Yeah.
And that's, well said. You know, it's like you, as an entrepreneur, you're definitely balancing the both. And then as a bigger part of this, as COO and CEOs, we're doing a lot more leadership necessarily than management. And when it flips to managing people and not things is when we all get in trouble.
Well, I mean, sometimes I think, too, even you have other people like Warren Buffett, and I don't think he has a pithy quote, but the basic principle of Yeah, with just hiring good people that you trust and have shown integrity. And, you know, then he buys the businesses and gets out of the way. Maybe he has some secret sauce that we don't know about when he evaluates people and comes to understand people, but he sure makes it sound simple and easy.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So as we get closer to our next break, we're talking about building cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement. John, I want you to be thinking about anything else that you could share with our listeners around, you know, what other than this transparency that we talked about quite a bit and is very challenging subject matter, anything else that you can think about that's important to a leader to build a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement that really works rather than just sounds politically correct?
Well, I'll give you one line just before the break. It's not about the money.
That's a great quote. Can we quote you on that?
Yep.
We were just talking about that right before lunch as we are heading into the break, but Steve and I were at lunch just recently, and I know, listeners, it's like 7 in the morning for you, but we have more energy to record this if it's in the afternoon. So we were talking at lunch of just that reality of when we come from the end result and we're trying to get leads into our business or we're trying to get sales and that's our only goal, that's actually not what produces that, but creating value, creating an atmosphere where people's needs are being met, then those things come up later, those leads, those sales, those things. But that avenue and environment of creating value for people and including those that work for you in your company. So we're leading into the break. We're with John Kieber, and we'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
All right, here we are back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. And we are with John Kieber, a former UW graduate, lives in Magnolia with Seattle and is with his wife and twin girls and passionate about free markets. John, you have to share with us a little bit about that. And UW rowing? What are you doing? That's like painful bike rides.
Yeah. Well, those things keep you honest.
Yeah, right. Well, we're heading into the final segment of the show or the last half of the show. John, why don't you share with us, since we are talking about transparency, if you could open up and just share maybe some of your entrepreneurial failures. You don't have to mention them by name if you don't like, but things that you learned in those entrepreneurial failures. I know we have entrepreneurs listening in every weekend. They'd love to hear how so many have failed. I'm actually looking at on my screen Abraham Lincoln's list of failures. I think we're all aware of it, but we only focus on the great successes, right? He had lists of failures in his life before he ever became president. So share that with us, John.
Well, God, that's just a hardball right down the middle. Gosh,
that wasn't on the questions that we sent you in the full disclosure.
That was just high, just above the shoulders, just right across the helmet. It's cliche to say that you learn the most from your failures, but it's cliche for a reason. It's true. For me, actually, the business Speech Forms, which is a voice technology business that that was acquired by actually one of our competitors that we were able to put together funding and do a lot of different things. But prior to it being acquired, was actually a failure or almost completely failed before we did sell the business. And to me, that was just a very, very painful lesson in picking the wrong market or picking the wrong market for the amount of funding that you can obtain. So it's great to be a visionary. It's great to see a market. It's great to be the first person to act on that market. And the voice technology business in 2002 was all those things. And right now you see all that come to fruition with Siri on your iPhone 4, iPhone 5, and many other smartphones. But in 2002, you were relegated to some crazy science fiction world where no one wanted to put in any money, even though we had some great enterprise applications that were being sold to some great companies around the Puget Sound like Concur Technologies. So challenging to realize that you may be right, but to entrepreneurs who might be listening, it's great that you're right, but make sure you have the funding and the excitement and the momentum behind you to be able to execute on your vision, because not only is it painful, it's painful for those around you to watch, because they know you're motivated, they know you want to make it happen, and they know you might ultimately be right, but sometimes you need market forces behind you.
Yeah, that's great wisdom. Great wisdom, John. So with the whole subject being building cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement, and, you know, transparency as a value that you've helped us, you know, understand from a deeper perspective, and even, you know, your own transparency and being willing to, you know, share some of your you know, failures and what you learned from them. Well, you know, where have you seen, I mean, you know, you're the top guy at a, you know, very prominent business magazine. Where have you seen in all the businesses that you've interacted with and related to and gotten data on for best places to work, et cetera, where have you seen these, you know, cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement start to deteriorate? And what can business leaders do to stop the deterioration before it starts?
Well, we do run a best companies program through Seattle Business, and we do get a lot of great companies that enter through our website at Seattle Business Mag. Just a quick plug for that event, where we do like to recognize great cultures each June. But the challenge with that question is we tend to get great companies applying, and it's sometimes harder for us to see the data on the ones that are not applying, because oftentimes they know they don't have a great culture and they're not entering or even getting editorial coverage. But I think something that we do see outside of our events and just some of the different companies that we get exposed to is, you know, selfishness is rampant, and that really rapidly breaks down a culture. It's not rampant with every company in Seattle or in the Puget Sound or even our great country for that matter, but it's rampant in bad cultures, I guess is what I'm saying. Is when you have a business that's going sideways or going down, you tend to get a lot of people who either don't want to accept blame or are taking way too much credit. Mm-hmm. And between those two things, again, simple concepts, but I think if you have a culture that is not built around, you know, autonomy and transparency, instead you get people where, well, no one really knows whose idea this was, so I'm going to take credit for it. Or no one really knows what the problem is, so I'm going to make sure to distance myself from this as soon as possible. If you don't have truth-telling going on a daily basis, or at least on a weekly basis, it's very easy for certain people to manipulate results, for better or for worse, and you get a lot of negative things transpiring from that. You have people going home who are working hard, who are the good folks, feeling like they're losing the war. You have, you know, bad folks who can pick up on some of these tactics and can run with them and realize it's the place for them to, God forbid, get ahead. It's just a lot of bad things happen, I think from that selfishness attribute, and I think owners and managers have got to be able to recognize that early, because if it's one individual, it can become 5 or 10 or 20 really fast.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. One of the particular processes that we've been able to help a number of companies put in place is a, measurement system, kind of, get on the scale and see how we're doing, that we actually learned from Southwest Airlines and one of the leaders who helped, put the system together, where we'll get input from the whole organization, from the C-suite through hourly workers, at defining the measurable behaviors that make up what's going on in the culture, rather than, just the values. So everybody has this beautiful value called integrity that they post up on the wall, but words like integrity mean different things to different people. If you just, hired an ex-convict yesterday in a job transition program to help somebody out, and you ask them to define their definition or to share their definition of integrity with you, it might be something like, well, their roommate stabbed somebody yesterday and they didn't tell, so that's very high integrity. And that's a way out in left field exaggeration, but we find that those same things take place on a regular basis, yet, the simple perspective of telling the truth, or someone makes an appointment with you at 3 o'clock and they don't show up and they don't call you to let you know, and it happens repetitively, well, that's a behavior that very clearly tells you something about someone's integrity. But folks who get in the habit of doing stuff like that don't realize it or associate it with integrity, or they wouldn't do it. What experiences have you had in your building the culture that you've built and this culture of transparency? What experiences have you had, or have you had any, with actually putting systems and processes in place in the organization that support and reinforce these basic values like telling the truth? Or have you seen any of the clients that you've worked with or companies that you've reported on that have done this and done it well?
Yeah, that's a tough question. It's a really tough question, and I think when you focus on that word integrity, just to clarify that one, because it sounds like you and I both have issues with how people use that word. Is I think people think integrity is the same as being trustful or telling the truth. And my definition of integrity is when people can repeatedly do the right thing. Integrity is repeatedly and making trust and truth a habit. And I think you can do a lot, or you can try and do a lot to try and make that part of your culture. But I think a tough, and frankly, I think everybody grapples with this, a tough concept is whether or not you just have to hire right in the first place. I think if someone doesn't have integrity and they've been spending 30 years telling lies, and they come into your organization and you point to a wall that says, here's our mission and values, we want to have you adapt to those. I think there's cases of people being morphed into that, or if someone's on the fence, I think you have a higher likelihood of getting them to adopt those values, especially if you already have a great place to work. But I think you really have to hire well. And this gets into a whole discussion of how people interview, what questions they ask. Are you getting through the interview with someone, or are you really doing some sort of role play or something where people's true characters can come out? Because I'm not, frankly, changing people and turning them from not so honest people into people that are going to be, it's beyond honesty, into becoming people that are comfortable in their own skin, that are able to admit when they're wrong, that are able to, interact with other people without it being a I dominate you or nothing else type experience. Yes, culture is important, but your hiring, I think, is the biggest part of building that culture and making sure it happens. And I guess the converse to that is making sure you get rid of people that maybe display some behaviors that that aren't consistent with what you want, because if you keep one person, no matter how high of a performer they are, that person's behavior is always going to come back to haunt you when someone else makes an excuse and points to that person and asks why they can get away with it and they can't.
Yeah, what a couple of, I don't know if you even realize that you said this, but a couple of great questions for 360 reviews, you know, in an organization, evaluating leaders or just anybody in the organization, is, you know, is Joe or Sue comfortable in their own skin? Are they able to admit when they are wrong and take ownership for mistakes, you know, or just huge character issues that, you know, when folks get under pressure and start crawling into the survival mode, that, you know, oftentimes get compromised. And it sounds like what you have focused your organization and culture on is using these tough times as learning experiences to really build the fiber, as opposed to, you know, people ducking and hiding and trying to avoid the inevitable until they actually create the inevitable.
You know, it was a lot easier when media was about 3 martini lunches at 2 p.m. Can I just come back to that just briefly? This is all great, but we made the most of it. It and I think every business has this moment of trying to make, you know, trying to make lemonade out of lemons, and along with fixing your culture and changing what you're about, I mean, there's a lot of other great things you can do in terms of cost and then going after new markets and other things that can invigorate your workplace. But the reviews certainly can bring up a lot of truths that maybe we don't always want to recognize.
Yeah, so true, so true. So as we get closer to our next break, what we're going to ask John to talk to us about after the break is the impact of employee engagement on the whole subject of a culture of ethics and values, and the big word, employee engagement, in a time when Gallup has reported that 71% of all American workers are effectively disengaged with their work. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Biz Culture Matters from ExcellentCultures.com on Play 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/ExcellentCultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
Back online with John Kieber, COO of group publisher Tiger Oak Media, overseeing media properties such as Seattle Magazine, Seattle Business, Seattle Health, and our favorite, Seattle Bride. And we're excited to have you back.
Mr. No more questions about my failure.
All right, no more. I promise. What about your alma mater's failure last week in the Apple Cup? How about that?
I think the line of the weekend was, we cooked it. No question. Gosh. I feel sorry for that. I mean, you know, our kicker, Coons, is just a kid, but wow.
Right.
Happy nation.
Right.
Not happy.
Yeah.
Well, the Catholics are happy because Notre Dame's doing really well this year.
They hung on. They managed to hang on where we didn't.
Steve, you were leading into a quite next question with John.
Yeah. You know, Gallup last fall released their most current data on employee engagement with American workers. And what the survey tells us is that a whopping 71% of, you know, our employees in this United States of America are effectively disengaged with their jobs. So the question for John is, you know, what connection has he seen with his experience, both in leading his own businesses and his own teams, and with all the companies that he's had opportunities to interview and overview and review data on best places to work? What connection, John, do you see between cultures of ethics and values and the big E of employee engagement?
Well, I think just before the other break, I was mentioning that it's not about the money, and that is a really hard concept to grasp, especially when you see incentives as being just the driver of all things, and this very easy, tangible lever that you can pull as an owner or manager to throw money at things to try and make things happen. But I was really thrown for a loop. I don't know if you've seen this. There's a management guru, or I guess add the quotations around guru, Thomas Pink. Are you familiar with him?
No.
Yep. And if you Google Thomas Pink on YouTube, there's a 10-minute talk he gives on some experiments where basically knowledge-based employees were given incentives around cash. Non-knowledge-based employees were given incentives around cash. And just to summarize the 10-minute talk, the people who were promised cash, who were non-knowledge workers, i.e. factory workers or jobs like that, they did see an improvement in performance of, 10 or 15% when they had a financial incentive around that. But with knowledge-based workers, they actually, not only did they not see performance go up when cash was thrown at certain concepts or at certain goals, but in many cases they saw performance go down. And that this concept just threw me in it, and I had to think about it, and I had to sort of look back at the last couple of years. And unfortunately, there's times where he's been right, I've been wrong, where just putting money at a problem. I'm financially driven. I'm dollars driven. I like seeing the spreadsheets look blacker and blacker and less red. But not everyone thinks like me, and we run a very creative organization with photographers and art directors and event producers and writers and editors, and throwing money at certain problems isn't what people are getting excited about. I mean, I think if you have life-changing money around things, people might be able to change their behavior. But most people, not just in our organization, most people want to make money, and they like to make more money. But the biggest reason they're going to work at your business isn't because you pay them this fantastic amount of money. Now, maybe if you're Goldman Sachs, all the rules go out the window. But for most people, they're going to work because they love it, and they want to feel empowered. They want to go home at the end of the day and say to their significant other or relative and say, guess what I did, or guess what I'm doing, or guess what I'm about to do, or what we're planning on doing. They want to be part of something. And I think where you really start to get some great results is where people feel like they own it. It's their project. It's new. It's groundbreaking. Or at least it's groundbreaking for them. But a lot of things I just covered right there. But I think the idea is, yes, cash matters to a certain point, but after that, you need to create a situation where people can feel ownership and empowerment around a piece of work, around a piece of business, and you need to be able to be confident enough as a manager to give them credit for that.
Yeah, that's very well said, John. You mentioned, as you said, a lot of pieces of the puzzle and a lot of components there. Let's kind of park on one for a second and talk about this business of people being, you know, in their jobs because they love what they do. And I think it was even Ralph Waldo Emerson had some very interesting things to say about that concept way back when, you know, he was, you know, still alive and writing. But so many folks have become so good at faking engagement just to get hired, and you know, head nodding and smiling and at the right appropriate moments and being politically correct and acting excited when deep down inside all they can think about is 5 o'clock, get me out of here and let me go do what I really want to do. As a leader, how have you addressed that situation, or have you addressed it, or have you seen anybody who has found a way to address it effectively well, where, you know, we've got folks in the right place at the right time doing what they love and are passionate about, as opposed to, well, we're just here to get a paycheck so we can go do what we really want to do?
You know, Steve, I just scream at people to look happy. If I walk by their desk, I just louder and louder and louder, I tell them to look happier and happier. No, I'm just kidding.
I was holding back laughing because I was like, uh-oh, this is the culture show. What's he doing?
No, you were sounding.
He's like Dilbert's boss.
No, you were. I actually was listening. I thought, oh, maybe we've got it. Wait, maybe we've got. Your tone of voice was so serious. You had us going.
I'm going to deadpan it. I mean, I think maybe the sad part about that is there are actually some folks that more or less, maybe not that badly, but would walk by someone who doesn't look happy and like, hey, come on, cheer up. Like, well, no, there's a reason they don't look too cheery. They hate working for you. Come on. to get to your question on, you know, how do you decipher between someone being truly engaged and not truly engaged? Again, it's a really tough one because on the one hand, I think there are parts of work, there are parts of a job that aren't fun. You know, there's parts of life that aren't fun. No one likes raking leaves for 2 hours, at least I don't. No one likes going through, you know, some data for some administrative task that has to get done because of some IRS report or some compliance report. It's not fun. And if you're going through a certain part of your season or a certain part of your week where you're doing that, that's not fun. And so I think the hard part is sometimes you do have members of your organization that are whining. Whining does exist. It's not always the manager's fault. I think the hard part is managers start getting mixed up, and we all do, at trying to decipher when someone is just complaining or when there's an actual problem. And I think you probably have more data than me, but it's somewhere along the lines of, I think if someone is disengaged or unhappy more than 50% of the time, they're probably in the wrong job. They probably shouldn't be there. They have diminishing returns. So how do we decipher, how do we hire hire correctly in the first place? One is just, this is going to sound a little crazy, but you could tell a lot about talking about someone's resume. If they are listing accomplishments, that's one thing. If you're asking about something on someone's resume and they can extrapolate, they can give examples, and they start applying it to your business before you've even asked them, well, you can pick up pretty quickly that this person is going to be engaged in your organization. So I'm not saying everyone should make hiring decisions based on voice intonation, but there is a certain amount of gosh, this person really does get it. They're enthusiastic. They understand our business. I think sometimes when you're hiring, you want to check off that box and you want to get the right person. You want to move on, and you maybe just kind of hope that person's going to be excited. But when they're actually in the workplace, you know, people tend not to say the words "I'm bored." They tend not to say the words "I'm unhappy." And they tend to act out those things in very different ways. So I think you just have to read the tea leaves sometimes around, you know, when that person consistently doesn't show up for a meeting around this topic, they're probably not engaged. Now, they're going to tell me upside down and sideways that they are, but I think you have to look for the nonverbal behaviors, and after a while, you accumulate enough evidence where you just think that person doesn't want to be here.
Yeah. What if you could just talk to their wives? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or have them call you.
Yeah. Just, exactly.
Just, you know,
yeah.
Have the weekly conference call of
or their husband.
How's Bob doing?
Yeah.
So as we kind of head toward a wind down here, John, what advice would you have to today's businesses and corporations of, you know, what can they do to establish true cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement? What should they be doing that they're not doing?
You know, it really, again, I'm trying to break this down into, and great questions today, by the way. I've really enjoyed being on the show, and there's a lot of different things that you've allowed me to carry on about, so I appreciate that. But, you know, on the broad advice for business owners, and I guess when I'm sometimes talking with my peers or some other folks here at Tiger Oak, is people just need to humanize a lot more. There's said differently, I think sometimes people, they get a title or they get to a certain point in their career where they're just taking themselves way too seriously. Okay, maybe sometimes it's warranted if you're, you know, maybe General Petraeus was a little too human. But I think for most of us, people need to be able to laugh a little. People need to be able to have a joke or be made fun of once in a while. I think if no one in your organization has ever poked fun at you, you're probably not that great of a leader. No one feels comfortable around you. No one probably likes you. It's, God, there's my big bad boss, and I don't want to say anything wrong ever. There's times to be a boss, and I think overall there probably could be a little bit more respect shown both ways, from bosses and to bosses in our workplace. But I think with a lot of leaders, they need to be reminded, look, you already have a lot of power. You control people's promotions. You control people's paychecks. You have a lot of influence over how they feel when they go home or how they feel going into a weekend or how they're feeling about their life in general. You already have a lot of power. Man, just, you know, give people an inch. Give people a little bit of humanness. And I think people are surprised at how far that can go in terms of people trusting you, in terms of people being with you when you most need them. You can't be a non-human manager and then maybe when a project of yours is going sideways, ask everyone else to rally for you just because you're not going to find a lot of people there for you.
It's huge.
So if you see the latest new leadership assessment and the operative question is, how many times have you poked fun at your boss in the last month, you will know that came from John Cuber.
It's got to be poked fun in front of your boss, in front of your boss, not behind your boss's back. That's the bad culture we're talking about.
Well,
man, John, thank you so much. We appreciate you being on the show. And thank you, listeners. This is Biz Culture Matters. Come visit us online at excellentcultures.com. We want to have a conversation with you. You can follow us on Twitter at excellentcultures.com. Sign up for our daily culture coaching emails at our website, excellentcultures.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, John.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun, guys.
And in closing, listeners, remember, you need to be among Seattle businesses' best places to work. Be sure and visit John's site at John.
Seattle Business Mag. It's seattlebusinessmag.com. And just, yeah, briefly, you can also get, if you're a working manager or executive, you can get a free subscription to Seattle Business. So I encourage you to do that.
Awesome.
Oh, what a great offer.
Awesome.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Thanks, we'll leave you with this quote, listeners, from Brian Tracy. Become the kind of leader that people would follow voluntarily, even if you had no title or position. Thank you. Catch you next Saturday at 7 a.m. on Clay 1180.